أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي ليس لأوليته اقتضاء ولا لأزليته انقضاء، وانحسرت الأوصاف عن كنه معرفته ورضعت عظمته الأقول، والذي لا تواري عنه سماء سماء ولا أرض أرضا. ثم الصلاة والسلام والتحية والإكرام على سيد البطحاء سيد المرسلين والأنبياء أبي القاسم محمد المصطفى.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
وعلى الجوهرة القدسية البتول العذراء سيدة النساء فاطمة الزهراء، وعلى بعلها أمير المؤمنين وبنيها الذين أذهب الله عنهم الرجس وطهرهم تطهيرا.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد،
لا سيما على بقية الله وحجته الكبرى الذي بيمنه رزق الورى وبوجوده ثبتت الأرض والسماء، ولولاه لساقت الأرض بأهلها، واللعنة الدائمة على أعدائهم أجمعين من حين عداوتهم إلى قيام يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه الكريم: يا أيها الذين آمنوا كتب عليكم الصيام كما كتب على الذين من قبلكم لعلكم تتقون. صلوات
الله على محمد.
Allah is saying in the Holy Quran, O you who believe, fasting have been made wajib, made a fariza upon you, the way it had been made a fariza upon those before you, لَعَلَّكُمْ تَتَّقُونَ, maybe you become muttaqi. So we are expected to become muttaqi if we fast according to the prescribed way. What is the prescribed way of fasting? First of all, fasting is of three types in Islam, three levels of fasting. And before I go to those three levels, it's good that we talk about the definition of fasting in Islam. That will make it easy to understand those three levels. So the definition of fasting is like this. Thank you. That's the definition of fasting. In our fiqh, that means keeping away from the muftirat, those invalidating agents, things which invalidate the fasting, from the time of the true dawn, which we call al-fajr al-sadiq. That's the time where we start praying the fajr prayers, till the time of the maghrib. Qurbatan ilallah means to seek the nearness of Allah. That's the definition of fasting. So we have to abstain from all those things which invalidate the fast. Those things are called muftirat, things which make the fast batil. Muftirat. We have to keep away from the muftirat from this time till that time. So, and this is what answers the concern of our Sunni brothers as well, you know, who believe that if you delay in opening the fast, it will become makruh. Well, fast is not broken by eating the food, that you have to necessarily eat the food, otherwise it will become makruh. But what if a person is a poor person, he doesn't have anything to eat? What's he gonna do? His fast will always become makruh because he has nothing to eat. Fast is going to end automatically according to the definition when the time of Maghrib comes. Whether you eat or you don't eat, right from the beginning of the ibadat, your intention is to keep away from muftirat from the time of the Fajr prayers till the time of Maghrib. When the time of Maghrib comes, according to the niyat of your fast, the fast already ended. Whether you eat or you don't eat, eat is not part of the definition. Eating is not part of the definition. You eat or you don't eat, that's irrelevant. When the time expires, the fast ends. What if a person doesn't have anything to eat, so his fast will always be makruh? It doesn't make any sense, right? So we need to understand the definition so the things are clear in our mind. Now, fasting is of three levels. The level of awamun nas, the regular people in the society, ignorant people. There are some ignorant people who think that all it takes to fast is to just abstain from eating and drinking. This is what we call Sawmul Awam, fasting of the ignorance, regular ignorant people. This is not fasting in Islam at all, but this is how some ignorant people think. They perceive that this is the way we should fast. All you need to do is to abstain from eating and drinking. That's not fasting in Islam. Fasting is not just to abstain from eating and drinking. Fasting is much more than just that. So, the fast which Islam considers to be fasting requires us to abstain from all the harams. And every part of our body should have a share in fasting. Our eyes should be fasting. That means we don't see with our eyes all those things that Allah made haram to watch. Our ears need to be fasting. That means we don't listen to those voices that Allah made haram to listen. That's the share of the ears in the fasting. Our hands need to be fasting, which means that I don't perform anything through the hands that Allah made it forbidden. My legs need to be fasting. That means I need to be particular not to walk to places where Allah forbade. Allah made it haram to go to those places. And so on and so forth. So all parts of the human body have a share in fasting. It's not just the stomach. So abstaining from food and drink is the perception of the regular ignorant people of the society, which Islamically speaking is not the definition of fasting and is not considered to be fasting at all. Fasting is considered to be a fasting when all parts of the body have a share and we keep away from the harams. This is what the fast is. And for that kind of fasting, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam has said, As-salmu junnatum minan nar. It's a knowledge to apply the hadith appropriately on the appropriate subject. So not everyone is empowered to understand every hadith and to apply it properly on those various subjects and the implications of the hadith. So this hadith of the Prophet where he says fasting is a shield from the hellfire. Sawmu junnatum minan nar. This hadith applies to the second level, which I just explained to you, where every part of the body has a share. If we are fasting in that kind of format, where every part of our body has a share in fasting, then the hadith of the Prophet will apply in our favor. This kind of fast is actually a shield from the hellfire. It will block the flames of fire from reaching my body. So, and we believe in Tajassum al-Amal, we believe in the personification of our actions. Every action that we are doing, good or bad, will be personified in the forms and shapes, and we will see our actions in the Nurani, the luminous forms, or Zulmani, the dark forms and shapes. We will see our Salat, we will see our fasting, we will see our Hajj, we will see our qoms, every single good or bad deed that we performed, we will see those deeds in forms and shapes, either Nurani, illuminated with the divine light, or Zulmani, means dark forms and dark shapes. And Quran says, فَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ خَيْرًا يَرَهُ. Isn't it right? So whoever performs equal to the grain of a mustard, smallest possible particle of anything that you may do in your life, smallest deed of yours, يَرَهُ, he will see it. وَمَنْ يَعْمَلْ مِثْقَالَ ذَرَّةٍ شَرًّا يَرَهُ. And whoever performs a grain of a mustard, such a small thing, such a small deed of evil, will see it. So we will see our good deeds, our bad deeds. So we will see our fastings, our prayers, and all the deeds in our grave, and on the Day of Judgment. So that fasting is considered to be fasting by Allah, which belongs to the level number 2, which has all parts of our body included in the fast. All parts are fasting and they have a share. And the highest level of fasting is what we call Siyamul Fikr. Siyamul Awam, the fasting of the ignorant people, some ignorant people in the regular public, which is not considered to be fasting in Islam, just to abstain, they think just abstaining from eating and drinking is enough, which is not enough. Siyamul Khawas, where all parts of our body have a share in fasting, and this is what the fasting is about. And that's the minimum we are supposed to do. The maximum is the third level, which is Siyamul Fikr, which means fasting of our imaginations, which means that during the fast we cleanse our imaginations and minds, that we don't even think of any haram, and we don't even think of anyone or anything other than Allah. This is a very, very, very high level. This is what the Prophet in Ahlul Bayt used to do. That's their level of fasting. It's a very high level that a person doesn't even think about anyone or anything other than Allah. So this is the highest level, and the levels and the rewards are also different for these two levels. The first one has no reward. That's not fasting. But the second and the third has different rewards related to those levels. So for this highest level, Siyam al-Fikr, where our imaginations are also fasting, for that level of fasting, the Hadith al-Qudsi applies. Where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, Hadith al-Qudsi is those statements of Allah which are not part of the Holy Quran. Those conversations that took place between Allah and the Prophet, which are not part of Quran, we call them Hadith al-Qudsi. So Hadith al-Qudsi applies here, where Allah has said, "As-sawmu li wa ana ajzi bihi." Fasting belongs to me, and I am going to reward for it. So that Hadith al-Qudsi of Allah applies for this third level of fasting, which is Siyam al-Fikr. It does not apply, you know, on something which is of not that level. So we need to be mindful about that. So, and that's what our Urufa have said. And some of the Urufa recite this Hadith al-Qudsi in a different way. Instead of saying, "As-sawmu li wa ana ajzi bihi," they recite it, "As-sawmu li wa ana ujza bihi." It's grammatically speaking, in Arabic, it can be recited in that way as well. So Arabic is a very deep language. So if you read it in the second way, "wa ana ujza bihi," it means that fasting is mine and I am the reward for it. Allah Himself is the reward. Nothing else can be the reward other than Allah Himself. For the brand makes sense, for those people who think of nothing other than Allah in their minds, they deserve to get, you know, Allah as their reward. Paradise is for the followers of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. They are the owners of paradise. They deserve much more than just paradise. So this is just a little introduction about fasting. Now, fasting is one of the very special rulings of the of Islam. Special in the sense that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doesn't want us to miss out on this worship. If we miss out on that intentionally, there are penalties which apply. And by looking at the penalties, you will understand the level of importance that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is holding for that. So penalties are very strict in fasting. Those are not easy penalties. So when the penalties are difficult, it makes us think that this is something we have to avoid at every cost, so we don't end up paying this high penalty. So if you live in Ireland, and you know, any of the civil violations, for example traffic violations, they raise the citation, the ticket money so high, obviously they want you to be very particular about that thing. That's why they're raising the penalty so high, right? So certain violations are so bad in the eyes of Allah that He doesn't want the human beings to end up doing those violations. So all the violations are bad, but specifically some are really bad. So fasting is one of those precious few rulings of Islam where the violation, the penalties are too high. So the penalty of not fasting What is the penalty if we don't fast intentionally?
If we don't fast intentionally, then
we will be breaking the fast. Now, if you break the fast, breaking the fast through a halal thing, or breaking the fast through a haram. These are the only two options. When you're not fasting, you would be breaking your fast. So are you breaking your fast through a halal thing? You are drinking water, eating some halal food, or you are breaking the fast through a haram thing. God forbid we eat something which is non-halal. So I'm breaking the fast through a haram thing. So the penalties are different based on that. If a person breaks the fast through a halal thing, he has to choose from one of the three. Whereas if a person breaks the fast through a haram, he has to do three of the three penalties. So there are three penalties which are mentioned. First is feeding 60 mu'min miskeen, Islamically defined poor, destitute, broke, miskeen people. Or number two is fasting for 60 days in a row ...31 without gaps, and 29 can be with the gaps. And number three is setting a slave free, which is not possible nowadays. Nowadays we don't have slavery, but in those days people had the slaves. Islam forbids slavery and condemns slavery and eradicated slavery gradually. So Allah legislated certain rulings, and based on those rulings and wisdoms, we find the slavery has been eradicated totally. Right now there is no slavery remaining, right? So these are one of the ways how Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala eradicated it, and alhamdulillah it worked well and it is gone. Right now if you ask any mujtahid, every mujtahid would say that buying and selling of a human being is haram in Islam. So this is no longer an option right now, but it used to be an option in those days where people had slaves, and Islam condemned it and eradicated that. So right now we have only two options, but in total there were three, that's why I mentioned three. So right now we have only two options remaining. So you have to, if you break the fast through a halal thing, that means you drink water or halal food, for example, then for one missing out on one fast, you have to feed 60 mu'min, destitute, broke, miskeen people. Miskeen is somebody, I defined faqir earlier in the earlier workshop. Faqir in the Islamic definition means somebody who doesn't have expenses, 1 year expenses of his life. He may not necessarily be begging on the street, but if he is lacking 1 year of his expenses within the framework of his social status, 1 year of expenses of his necessities of life, he's faqir. Miskeen is aswa'u halan min al-faqir. Miskeen is somebody who is even more broke than a faqir. So, and he has to be a 12-hour imami, mu'min person. You have to feed 60 mu'min miskeen people in lieu of missing one fast. Or, you have to do one of the three. Or you have to fast for 60 days in a row, in the sense that 31 fasts should be without gaps, and the rest of the 29 can be with the gaps. Plus, you have to do Baba, which is obvious. What you miss one fast, you have to do the qada of that fast. And plus you have to do istighfar for missing the fast. This is understood. These things are understood. No need to be said. You missed out on one fast, you have to do the qada and plus do the istighfar. And in addition to that, that's the penalty. You have to choose between one of those two things. The third is no longer an option. But if you break your fast through a haram thing, you have to do all the three. So you have to, here in this case, obviously, you have to do these two things and then do istighfar for the rest. You have to feed 60 mu'min miskin people, and you have to fast for 60 days, 31 without gaps and 29 with gaps. So you have to do both of them together. Okay? For missing each fast that you miss, if you break the fast through a haram. Let's suppose you ate something, God forbid, which is haram to eat. So, this is how the penalty works. Now, in some cases, we have qada applying without any kafara. In some cases we have qada and the kafara, and in some cases we have qada and the combined kafara. This kafara that we just talked about, you have to do all of them. This is called kafaratul jama, the combined kafara. This is called the combined kafara. So in some cases you have to do qada only, no kafara. In some cases you have to do qada plus one kafara. In some cases you have to do qada plus three kafaras, combined kafara. These are the three different types, three different situations that you may encounter. So, first let us talk about those incidents where you are supposed to do the combined kafara, all the three kafaras together. So, all the three kafaras together, obviously I wrote it in a very general sense. If you break the fast with a haram, God forbid, then you have to do kafaratul jam, the combined kafara. Examples for that, so it's very clear in your mind. For example, if someone ascribes a false statement towards the Holy Prophet. If you say during the fasting that this is the hadith of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, this is the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam, this is the hadith of Rasulullah, although the Prophet never said it. If someone is posting a hadith on Facebook and you like it, that means you are supporting that hadith. You are certifying that statement, although the hadith was fake. So if you like the hadith on Facebook, that means you are certifying the hadith, not opposing it. You did not dislike it, right? So that means you are supporting the hadith. So you would break your fast if you support, if you certify a statement which is fake. If you certify the statement which is fake, that will mean you are breaking a fast through a haram, relating a haram, a wrong statement towards the Holy Prophet, which is a slander and tuhmat on Rasulullah or the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And you, obviously, it's a haram, and that will be, you have to do kafara. So jam, combined kafara means feeding 60 mu'min miskin people plus fasting for 60 days in a row. 31 without gaps and 29 can be with gaps, plus the qada and the istighfar for that. This is kafaratul jama. Another example, if you are, for example, haram relationship between a man and a woman. That's another example. If you burp and something comes out from your throat into your mouth and you take it back into your throat, that's also haram, breaking your fast through haram. Because if something comes out from the inside into the mouth, we are not supposed to eat it again. It's haram to eat. So if something comes out from the throat into the mouth, you have to throw it out during the fasting. If you did not throw out and you gulped the thing, you put it back into your throat, then you broke the fast through a haram. You have to pay the combined kafara for that. Another example for anything of haram, anything which is haram, you know, eating the money from which you didn't pay the homes, that's also haram, right? So if you eat that money, that food which is purchased from the amount of from that money which khums is applicable on it, and you pay, so using that money is haram, right? So breaking your fast through any sort of haram will make you pay the triple penalties, all the combined kafara for that, plus the qada and istighfar, which is already understood. I don't have to repeat it because that's understood. I miss one fast, I have to do the qada for one, and the istighfar for that, and in addition, we have to do the penalty. So this is the situation for the haram, breaking the kafara, the fast through a haram thing. And likewise, if you're standing on the street and there's some dust on the street, so eating soil is haram in Islam. During the fasting, you should be careful nothing of the dust and soil enters into your mouth. Right? The only soil which is allowed to consume is the turbat of Abi Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salatu wa salam. الشفاء في تربته استجابة الدعاء تحت قبته. Dua is accepted under the dome of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and his turbat has been awarded shifa and cure in it. So when we have our people getting sick, we make them eat a little bit of that turbat. That is the only turbat which is allowed to be eaten for the sick people for shifa. And not just that, but whenever babies are born, right, likewise, the thing number one that we feed our babies after their birth is, and it should be, the turbat of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Whenever your children are born, the first thing that we feed them is the turbat of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. Okay? Let's keep it in mind. We have the hadith from Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam, where he says, حَنِّكُوا أَوْلَادَكُمْ بِتُرْبَةِ الْحُسَيْنِ وَمَاءِ الْفُرَاتِ. So حَنِّكُوا تَحْنِيك means you dip the turbat in the water of Furat and you make your baby eat that. That's how we do this mustahab. First thing we feed to our newborn babies should be the turbat of Imam Hussain alayhi salam. So that's allowed. But other than that, any other turbat is not allowed to eat. It's haram to eat the soil, although it's tahir. Soil is not najis. Being najis or tahir is a different discussion. Being halal to eat and haram to eat is a different discussion. Something may be tahir, like soil, is tahir in itself, but still haram to eat. Right? So don't confuse between tahir and najis. And halal and haram, they're two different things. Something may be tahir, but it will still be haram to eat. So this is about the kafaratul jam'. Now, the combined kafara. Now let's move towards those situations where we have, just one kafara applying on the person. So if a person breaks the fast through a halal thing, for example, he eat the halal food, he drank water, that's the where he has to pay one kafara. Even if you repeat that thing, you keep on drinking water or keep on eating the halal food several times during the fasting, the kafara is not going to be repeated. You still have to do one kafara only. So, and you are breaking the fast through a halal thing, so that's just one kafara and it will not be repeated, even though you may be drinking water several times, one after the other. Likewise, another example for where is one kafara applying only is where you made a nazar to do the fasting and you intentionally broke your fast. So you have to pay the kafara in that situation as well. And that's just one kafara, not the combined kafara, not the all the three together, just one kafara. So nazar, if you do the nazar that I'm going to fast today, and after making nazar, you break your fast. Nazar is not something that you just say, I do the nazar. It's not the way you do the nazar in Islam. And like they say, mannat maan li maine. Mannat maan li kehne se nazar nahi hoti hai. Nazar requires an Arabic formula and sigha to be recited. If you recite the Arabic sigha for the nazar, then your nazar is called shar'i and Islamic nazar. There is a sigha in Arabic to be recited. ये कहने की जी मैंने तो मन्नत मान ली कि मैं ऐसा करूँगा या ऐसा करूँगी, इससे कुछ भी नहीं होता मन्नत मानने से. ये उर्दू का लफ्ज़ है. मन्नत ज़बान से कह देने से कोई नज़र नहीं होती, नज़र इस तरह से नहीं होती. नज़र का अरबी का सीगा है. यू हैव टू रीड दैट अरबिक सीगा और इट्स एग्जैक्ट ट्रांसलेशन इन योर लैंग्वेज एंड ओनली देन इट बिकम्स द शरई बाइंडिंग नज़र विच यू आर ऑब्लाइज टू फुलफिल. सो इफ यू सेड मैंने मन्नत मान ली, then nothing is wajib on you because you did not read the seedha of nazar. Okay, what is the seedha of nazar? Lillahi alayya an af'ala kadha. For the sake of Allah, it's incumbent upon me to do this and this and this, whatever, if Allah does such and such for me. For example, if Allah gives cure to my son, it's incumbent upon me to slaughter a sheep if Allah cures my son. So if you say the exact translation of that Arabic, now that it's called shar'i nazar and it became wajib on you to fulfill it. If Allah gives shifa to your son, you must slaughter a sheep. Okay? Because you said that sentence either in Arabic or its exact translation. Lillahi alayya an af'ala kadha. So this is called the shar'i nazar. Not just you say, maine mannat maan li ki ji main aisa karungi. Isse koi fark nahi padta. Urdu ka lafz kehne se is andaaz se कोई हासिल नहीं होता. सो इफ यू डिड द नजर फॉर डूइंग अ फास्टिंग, Now, after doing that, tomorrow I'm going to fast. You recited the Arabic Sila or its exact translation in your language, that I'm going to fast tomorrow. So now tomorrow you have to fast, it's wajib, because it's the shari nazar. And then you broke your fast. So here you have to do one kafara. This is one of those places where one kafara is wajib. Plus, obviously, you have to do the qada of that nazar fasting that you did not do. You have to do the fast, right? And you have to do the istighfar, which I said is obvious. I don't have to repeat it again. So, the next thing about where the qada or where one kafara is wajib, not the combined kafara, is if you break your fast by doing any of the muftirat other than intentionally vomiting. One of the things which is not allowed in the fasting is vomiting. We cannot intentionally induce vomiting on ourselves. But if you intentionally induced vomiting, it's not allowed, your fast will break, but there is no kafara. The rest of all the muftirat, rest of all the things that make the fast batil, if you do it intentionally, you have to pay a kafara for all of the muftirat. The only exception is intentionally inducing vomiting, which is not allowed, but if you do it, the fast will be batil, but there is no kafara on that. All the rest of the muftirat, if you do it intentionally, obviously your fast will become batil, plus you have to pay kafara, and plus the qada and istighfar. Is that clear? For all the muftirat, except there's only one exception, that is intentionally inducing vomiting, which is not allowed to do, but there is no kafara if you do that. And if you recall in the muftirat, things which are not break the fast, is one of those things was immersing your head into water. That's also not allowed during the fasting. You can immerse your entire body in water as long as your head is outside the swimming pool or sea, lake, whatever. That's okay. Your fast is okay. Your whole body is in the water, but your head is outside. But if you immerse your head, complete head inside the water all at once, not half of the head first and then the other half first and for the second time, that's not going to make the fast batil. But if you immerse the entire head all at once into the water, your fast will become batil. So in for that muftir, for that invalidating agent, also you have to pay the kafara according to the ihtiyat-e wajib. That's why I'm mentioning that separately. So I already said, for all the muftirat that you may do, you have to do the kafara, except one that is inducing vomiting, which has no kafara on that. Although it's not allowed to do, but there is no kafara. Likewise, another occasion where you have to pay one kafara only is where you rely on the statement of a person who is not adil, without doing the research, you break the fast. Somebody who is not adil, he told you, the time of Maghrib has already entered, so the time of Iftar is there, you can break the fast. This person is not adil, so you are not supposed to rely on his statement, but you relied on his statement. And without doing your personal research, you just relied on the statement of a person who is not adil and you broke the fast. In this case also, you have to pay the kafara. Okay? So we are not supposed to rely on the statement. I go for reciting nikah of people. The father of the daughter, clean-shaven person. So he comes and Maulana, yeah, my daughter has given permission, so please start reading the nikah. I cannot rely on your statement because you are shaving your beard, right? You're not classified to be called Adil. So I have to go and talk to your daughter and seek permission from her myself. Because I'm not supposed to rely on your statement, right? No, Maulana, I am the father. I am telling you. Oh, yes, you are the father. I'm not denying that. I'm not denying your fatherhood. But the point is that this Sharia is not allowing me to relying on the statement of person who is not categorized to be called an adil. So I have to seek permission from your daughter myself. Okay, so in the fasting, if you relied on a non-adil person saying that the time of iftar is there, and you, without doing the research or break your fast, then obviously you have to give the kafara in that case as well. These are all those situations where the kafara is wajib. So we talked about the places where all the three kafaras, the combined kafara is wajib, which we call kafara tul jam'. And we talk about those instances where one kafara is wajib. And now let's move towards the third discussion, where there is no kafara wajib, but only the qada is wajib. There are 10 situations. There are 10 situations in Islam where there is only qada wajib on you and no kafara. First of all, if a person induces vomiting intentionally. If unintentionally you end up vomiting, there's no qada, your fast didn't even break. But if you intentionally induce vomiting on yourself, then your fast will break, no kafara, but you just have to do the qada of the fasting. And obviously it's haram to induce the fasting. So you have to do istighfar as well. The second place where it's only qada, which is wajib with no kafara, is that a person who is mujnib in the state of janabat, where ghusl of janabat becomes wajib. A person in the state of janabat is supposed to do the ghusl of janabat before the time of fajr. So you enter into the time of fasting in the taharat state. So when you have ghusl of janabat wajib on you, you must do the ghusl of janabat before the azan of fajr. Now if you find yourself in the state of janabat, there's still time remaining for the azan of fajr and you want to sleep back again. You can sleep if you think you can wake up before the fajr and do the ghusl comfortably before the time of the azan. You are allowed to sleep. You are allowed to sleep 3 times. That means you woke up and again you go to sleep, you woke up, you again go to sleep. It's allowed to sleep 3 times before the fajr. It's not allowed to sleep for the 4th time. So if you slept for the 4th time and you could not wake up to do the ghusl of janabat, in that case obviously your fast is batil. Now in this case you have to do the qada of this day's fasting with no kafara. Okay, is that clear? The 4th place where that was the 2nd one. So let's go to the 3rd one. The 3rd place where a person is supposed to do qada only with no kafara is if you, on the day of fasting, you didn't make the niyat of fasting at all. Or during your fast, you started to do riya, showing off to others. Your fast will become batil in both the cases. Either you didn't do the niyat of fasting, without the niyat, there is no ibadat, there is no worship. You didn't do the niyat of fasting, so your fast didn't even start. So here you have to do the qada with no kafara. Or you did the niyat, you started your fast, but during the fasting you started to show off to others, to your colleagues, to your friends, to your, you know, relatives, to your mom and dad. Hey mom, today, hey, I'm fasting today. So you started to show off to others, riya, which is haram. Whenever, if a person does riya during the ibadat becomes batil. If you do riya and showing off after the ibadat, after the end of the ibadat does not become batil, but you lose the sawab. you sponsored your brother 20 years ago to come to Ireland, and whenever you sit in the living room with your bunch of friends, you all the stuff, see, I am the one who sponsored my brother to come to Ireland 20 years ago. I am the one who sponsored my relative. Why are you talking about? Why are you bragging about yourself? Stop mentioning your good deeds in front of the people. This is riya. Some people, when they sit on a, yeah, Maulana, I get so much thirsty when I wake up for Salatul Layl, Namaz Isha. So, you know, and you mentioned that you pray Salatul Layl, right? Why are we talking about our good deeds in front of the people? One way or the other. If we start talking about our good deeds, we lose the sawab. On the Day of Judgment, it will be said to the person, go get the sawab from that person for whom you showed off. We are not supposed to talk about our good deeds. We need to, you know, forget our good deeds and pay attention to our bad deeds. And we need to remember the good deeds of others and not to pay attention to their bad deeds. So, riya and showing off, if we do during any ibadat, that ibadat becomes batil. If we do the riya and showing off after the end of the ibadat doesn't become batil, ibadat already ended, but we lose the sawab. Okay? So likewise in fasting, if somebody either didn't do the niyat of fasting for that day, so his ibadat didn't even start, in that case he has to do qada with no kafara. Or during the fasting, he started to show off and do the riya. Fast became batil because it's during the ibadat and he has to do the qada, but there is no kafara in that case. Sheikh Abbas Qummi, Muhaddis Sheikh Abbas Qummi, rahmatullah alayhi, such a great scholar of ours who compiled Mafatih al-Jinan, this great book of du'as and diyarat. He had written a book called Manazilul Akhirah, Stations of Akhirah. He believed the Day of Judgment is a day that spans 50,000 years, equal to the calendar calculation of this world. 50,000 years of this world equals to one Day of Judgment. And we believe in Mawaqiful Qiyamah, stations of the Day of Judgment. There are 50 stations on the Day of Judgment. It's a very beautiful and detailed discussion. We will be stopped at 50 stations, 1,000 years at each station. The questions have been told to us. The examination paper is already out. It's the mercy of Allah. He already told us all those questions which we will be asked. Still, the human beings are not ready. What a pity. So 50 stations on the Day of Judgment, 1,000 years at each station, that totals up to 50,000 years of one Day of Judgment. Those stations are called Manazil or Mawaqif, stations of Qiyamah. So Muhaddis Qummi rahmatullah alayh, this great Muhaddis, great scholar, he wrote this book Manazil al-Akhirah, dealing with those stations of the Day of Judgment. Now his dad was not a scholar. His dad participated in the majlis of another scholar, and that scholar was reciting the majlis based on the book of Muhaddis Sheikh Abbas Qummi, the same book Manazil al-Akhirah that Sheikh Abbas Qummi wrote. Based on that book, that scholar was reading his majlis from that book, and the father of Sheikh Abbas Qummi attended his majlis, the majlis of that scholar. And he came back to his son and said, my son, I wish you had also written a book like Manazil al-Akhirah. That I went to the majlis of that scholar and he was talking about a book, Manazil al-Akhirah. It's such a great book, talking about the various stations of Qiyamah. I wish, my son, you have written a book like that. It was written by his son. But his son, Sheikh Abbas Qummi, never replied back to his father, Dad, that's my book. I am the one who wrote it. Because he thought it's riya and showing off. Why should I say? How much we express our own good deeds in front of the people. Okay, let's move to the next one. Somebody, without doing the research, continues to eat the food, and later on he finds out that he ate the food for too late. The time of Fajr already entered, the fast time already started, but he continued to eat the food and drink, whatever. He continued to eat without the research. So without doing the research, you are not supposed to continue eating the food at the Sahar time. You continue to eat the food at the Sahari time without doing the research. And later on you found the Fajr time already entered. So in that case, you have to do the qada of this day. There is no kafara, but you have to do the qada. That's the fifth place where the qada is wajib without kafara. The sixth place is if somebody says that the Fajr time did not enter, you can so Fajr time did not enter, you can continue to eat. So so you continue to eat, but later on you found out that Fajr time had already entered. Again, you are supposed to do the tahqiq and research, right? Not to continue eating without the research. So somebody said Fajr time did not start yet. You relied upon his statement. You continued to eat without doing the research. And later on you found out that Fajr time already had entered. Here again, you have to do the qada of this day. If there is no kafara. The seventh place where there is qada and no kafara is somebody told you that the time of Fajr has entered, but you don't accept his statement. You thought he is joking. Somebody told you the time of Fajr already entered. You did not accept his statement because you thought he's joking, and you continued to eat, and later on you find that the time of Fajr had entered already, but you ate, although you were told by somebody, but you still did not do the research, and you continued to eat, and later on you found the Fajr time had already entered. In that case also you have to do the qada, but no kafara. And the eighth place where there is qada without kafara is for the blind people. If there is a blind person and somebody tells a blind person the time of Maghrib has already entered, and he breaks his fast. And later on this blind person finds out, no, it was not the time of Maghrib. I ate ahead of the time. So for the blind person, he just has to do the qada and there is no kafara for him. And the second last, the ninth place where there is only the qada and no kafara is where on a clear weather, on a clear day, you end up having yaqeen and certainty that the time of Maghrib has entered and you start eating food. But later on you found that no, the time of Maghrib was not there yet. So you made a mistake in determining the time of Maghrib. You yourself made a mistake in determining the time of Maghrib. In that case also you have to do the qada with no kafara. And the last place where you have to do qada without kafara is if you put water into your mouth just to become cold. You're feeling too hot in the hot weather. You put some water in the mouth to get cold, and suddenly the water goes into the inside. So in that case you have to do the qada of this fasting. So if you forgot that, if your prayers are qasr, shortened, then you cannot fast. If your prayers are full, then you can fast. Okay? Now there's an exemption in this law. So, and exemption is if you are a frequent traveler, according to the Islamic definition of the frequent traveler, kathiru safar. In that case, you are supposed to fast during the travel. And you are supposed to pray full 4 rakats during the traveling, because you are a frequent traveler, according to the Islamic definition of a frequent traveler. What's the Islamic definition of a frequent traveler? Islamic definition of a frequent traveler is somebody who travels twice within every 10 days. If you travel 2 times minimum in every 10 days, you are called, Islamically speaking, you are called a frequent traveler. Okay? Now, so, you travel for the first time, then you travel the 6th day, for example, which is within the next 10 days. On the 6th day, you travel for the 2nd time. So now, you travel twice within 10 days. Now the 3rd trip and 3rd onwards, you will pray full and you will continue to fast during your travels. Because from the 3rd trip and 3rd onwards, you are counted to be a frequent traveler. The first 2 trips are not counted, because by doing those first 2 travels, you make yourself entitled. After the 2 travels, you make yourself entitled to be called a frequent traveler from the 3rd trip. Okay? So the first 2 travels will not count. From the 3rd trip, you will pray full, not qasr, during your travels, because you are a frequent traveler. And from the 3rd trip and 3rd onwards, you will fast during your travels, because you are a frequent traveler. That's the first exception. And the second exception for fasting during the travels is for those people who are living, who are, you know, what in Arabic we say, buyutuhum ma'ahum. Those people who have their houses with them. Those people who have no houses, basically. Those who are wandering from one place to the other, either living in deserts or wherever, those who are homeless and they are constantly traveling from one place to the other because they have no place to live. But those are the people who have no place to live and they constantly keep on traveling and wandering from one place to the other. These kind of people are supposed to fast during their travelings. And they will also pray full 4 rakats of prayers during their travelings. Okay, so these are the 2 categories which are exempt. That means they can fast during the travels. And they will pray full 4 rakats during the travels. And among those also is the 3rd and the last category is those whose profession is traveling. For example, a pilot, a lorry driver, truck driver, for example, a captain of the ship, their profession is traveling. So if a pilot whose profession is traveling, he is supposed to fast during his travels, and he's supposed to pray full 4 rakats of prayers during his travel, because his profession is traveling. But if you are an IT, you are an IT professional, you are a doctor, you are whatever, real estate agent, you are a consultant, whatever, and your IT profession, your employer asks you to travel from one city to the other for the sake of your job, then you are not, your profession is not counted to be traveling. You are traveling for the sake of the profession. Your profession is not traveling, your profession is IT. But you are traveling for the sake of profession, as compared to a pilot whose profession itself is traveling. He is not traveling for the sake of the profession. His profession is nothing but travel. Okay, is that clear? So these are the three people who are exempt, who are allowed to, not just allowed, but they are supposed to fast during their travels. So they will fast during the travels, plus they will pray full 4 rakats of prayers, not qasr. First one is the kasiru safar, Islamically defined frequent traveler. Second, those people who have no home to live and they are constantly on the move, wandering in the deserts or elsewhere from one place to the other. And third, those people whose profession is traveling itself like a pilot. They are the ones who are supposed to fast during their travels always, and they are supposed to pray full four rakats of prayers. وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Please pay attention to these conditions. For traveling, the going must be minimum 22.5 kilometers and the total must be 45 kilometers, including the return. So why I didn't mention, why we don't mention the return segment? Because the return segment may be less than 22.5, that's possible and that's okay. For example, this is your city and you are traveling to this destination city, okay? And you travel through this motorway, and this is like 35 kilometers long. So your going is 35 kilometers. And on your return, on your returning back, it is 10 kilometers only. So the total is 45 kilometers. Your salat will be qasr. Okay? Your return is less than 22.5. That's okay. Your going has to be minimum 22.5. Return can be less, depending on which freeway you are choosing. You are choosing a longer freeway, you'll count that distance. You're choosing a shorter freeway, you'll count that distance. Okay? But the going has to be minimum 22.5 kilometers and the total has to be 45 kilometers. Is that clear? Okay. And the total must be 45 kilometers. If you choose a longer route, taking a different freeway which is shorter or longer, that's your choice. Whatever freeway you choose, you will count that distance because you are going that distance. So, but the going has to be minimum 22.5 kilometers and the total must be 45 in order for the prayers to become qasr and in order for you not to fast, because when you are traveling, you cannot fast. Except for those few exemptions which I already mentioned, which will fast always. But other than those categories, for a regular person, he cannot fast when he's traveling and he will pray qasr, right? Number three, you must not pass through your watan, your Islamically defined hometown. So you travel, for example, during your travel, you pass through a city where you were born and raised. Place where you are born and raised is automatically your watan, your hometown. If you go to your hometown, you will always pray full. Even if you stay there for 1 hour, you will pray full. And even if you stay there for 1 day, you will fast. Okay? Because your watan is your hometown. So you, in order for you to have your prayers becoming qasr and shortened, and in order for you, for a regular person who doesn't fall in those three categories of exception, you are a regular person, not one of those three categories of exception. For a regular person, for you not to fast, you should not be passing through your watan. If you are passing through your watan and you are staying even for 1 day, you will fast there because it's your watan, and you will pray full because it's your watan. Okay? And number four, you must not have the intention of staying for 10 full days. So if you have the intention, for example, you travel from Dublin to London, and before traveling from Dublin, you made your niyyat, I will stay in London for 10 days. for 10 plus days, 15 days, 20 days, whatever, at least 10 days, 10 full days, then you will fast in London and you will pray full in London because you are intending to stay there for 10 full days. And you have this intention right at the beginning of your travel when you were leaving Dublin. If you, at the time of leaving Dublin, you thought, let me go there for 2 days. So you went there to London for 2 days, and then after reaching London, on the second day, you made your intention, okay, let me stay there for 5 more days. So now it's total 7 days. On the fifth day, which is in total the seventh day, on the seventh day, you make your intention, let me stay there for 3 more days. So in total, it's now 10 days. But you will continue to pray qasam. Why? Because from the beginning of your travel, you intended only 3 days. In the beginning of your travel, you intended less than 3 days, less than 10 days, right? So in order for you to have your prayers full, and in order for you to do the fasting, you must intend from the beginning of your travel, you must intend to stay in the destination city for 10 full days. Then you will fast and then you will pray full. Is that clear? So if you stayed in London for 2 days, you intended 2 days, then you extended another 5 days, then you extended another 3 days, another 5 days, another 2 days, another 3 days. Up till 30 days, you are allowed to keep on extending your trip. As long as you are extending for less than 10 days, you will continue up till 30 days to pray qasr and not fast. As long as you are extending less than 10 days. You are extending 3 more days, then 5 more days, then 7 more days, then 9 more days, then 2 more days. Less than 10 days. You keep on extending less than 10 days. You will continue to do qasr prayers and you cannot fast up till 30 days. You can do that. After 30 is different. Okay? Unless if you make an intention of staying for 10 full days. Let's suppose you went to London and you had the intention to stay there for 2 days only. But on the second day, you made the intention, let me stay there for 10 full more days. So now you'll start praying full. And now you'll start fasting. Because you made the intention of staying 10 full days. Is that clear? Okay, this is number 4. Number 5, the purpose of travel must not be a haram. Okay, so if I travel let us go to London to buy a gold band for my son-in-law. Okay, so wearing gold is haram for men, right? So I'm traveling from Dublin, God forbid, I travel from Dublin to London and my niyat is to go to London from Oxford Street. Let me buy a gold band for my son-in-law. This is haram. It's haram for men to wear the gold, right? So in this travel, I will have to pray full. I cannot pray qasr. Okay? I have to pray full. My salat is not qasr. This is called safarul ma'siyah. This is the traveling of haram. Whenever a person travels for a haram purpose, this travel, he cannot pray qasr. The purpose of travel must not be a haram or any haram. You go there, you travel to some city to do ghibat, to backbite, to cause fights between mu'mineen, slandering a mu'min, tuhmat, any other haram purpose, any haram and every haram. If you travel to any city throughout your travel, you have to pray full. You cannot pray qasr because the purpose of your trip is haram. Number 6, you must depart the Islamically defined limit of the greater city. This is a very important thing which people are confused about. What are the limits of the city? Because we count the distance from the limit of the city up to the limit of the destination city. Not from your house till your workplace. Till the address of your office. We count from the limits of your city till the limits of the destination city. From the limit to the limit. That's how 22.5 kilometers are counted and that's how 45 kilometers are counted. from the limits of the city till the limits of the destination city, not from your house to the address of your office. So what are the limits of the city? Limits of the city in Islam are defined by two ways. A, you stop hearing the voice of Adhan. That doesn't count in the Western world because we don't hear the voice of Adhan in the Western cities. Unfortunately, but that's the case. So the second way of finding out the Islamic limits of the city is that you stop seeing the last houses of that city. And that's the way we count it. So if you are living in any city, in greater metropolitan areas, that's the way it is. So now in America, it's very different. You know, they, for example, New York, I don't know how many of you are familiar with New York or Los Angeles. So like New York is just the downtown Manhattan Island. It's a tiny island and smaller than Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. Even the airport of Dallas-Fort Worth is bigger than the island of Manhattan, which has less than 10,000 population in the nighttime, and the daytime is more than 14 million people. And the daytime is more than 14 million people pouring from, you know, various surrounding states, and the nighttime is less than 10,000. So all those skyscrapers there, and so, so technically speaking, they call New York, the city of New York, is only the island of Manhattan. Okay, but that's not the way we count. In the Islamic definition, we count the entire greater metropolitan area as one huge city. So all the five boroughs of New York, Queens and Bronx and Brooklyn and Long Island and Manhattan, all of those are counted to be one greater New York City. So when you leave the limits of the greater metropolitan area and you stop seeing the vast houses of the city, this is where you start your odometer and start counting the 22.5 kilometer requirement. Okay, the 45 kilometers. Is that clear?
So let me,
for example,
this is your
house. So this is your city. So you are traveling towards this destination city. Okay? So you don't count your odometer of your car from this place. You are taking this freeway towards the city, okay? So up till this distance, you continue to see the last houses of the city. Up till here, you still see. When you reach this place, you stop seeing the last houses. Okay? From this place, you'll start your odometer of the car to count the 22.5. This is the point zero for you. Okay? This is not the limit of the greater city. Because when you take the freeway, you're traveling all this way, you continue to see the last houses here. Last houses are still visible. When you reach at this spot, you stop seeing the last houses. This is where you start the zero and you start counting 22.5. And then when you reach this place, you start seeing the first houses of this city. So we'll count the distance from this area till this place. Okay? This is how we count the miles. Not how they define in their books or how they write, you are entering into such and such county and such province or such and such city. What they write on the freeways is not our criteria. This is our Islamic criteria of counting the distance. Is that clear?